Translation. Sometimes I lie on the surface of the earth, sometimes on leaves, grass, or stone, sometimes on a pile of ashes, or sometimes, by the will of others, in a place on a first-class bed with pillows. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The learned Brahman's description indicates different types of births, for one lies down according to one's body. Sometimes one takes birth as an animal, and sometimes as a king. When he takes birth as an animal, he must lie down on the ground. And when he takes birth as a king or a very rich man, he is allowed to lie in first-class rooms in huge palaces decorated with beds and other furniture. Such facilities are not available, however, at the sweet will of the living entity. Rather, they are available by the supreme will, Parichaya, or the arrangement of Maya, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 18:61. Ishvaraha sarvabhutanam hridayeshu arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarvabhutani yatra duani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is established, situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities, who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. The living entity, according to his material desires, receives different types of bodies, which are nothing but machines offered by material nature according to the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By the will of the Supreme, one must take different bodies with different means for lying down. Omagan timarindasya gananjanan shalakaya chakshur unmilitam jena tashmai sri gurave namaha sri chaitanya manobishtam shtapitam jena bhutale swayam rupakadamayam dadanti swapadantakam pancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripasinupayevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Paschatadesha Tarine. So, this Brahman is talking to Narad Muni and he's telling him how his life goes. He's saying, sometimes I have this and sometimes I have that. Sometimes it's very good. Sometimes I eat palatable foodstuffs, and sometimes it's just stale. You know, pretty much he's saying, I take what comes my way. In his eating, he's discussing. Sometimes he eats in the daytime. Sometimes he eats at night. You see, so he's, as the previous verse said, he's taking the position kind of like the python. I'm in one place, and I'm accepting what comes my way, you see. Sometimes I lie on the earth, sometimes I lie on leaves, sometimes I'm in a great bed, you see. So one might wonder, well, why is this person's life so up and down like this? You see, that's not like the rest of us. It doesn't fit in with the material world altogether because people are envisioning, you know, I want, typically they'll see some advertisement and they'll think, well, I want some food stuff. I remember I was looking for a Sankirtan spot in Tucson, Arizona, years ago. I was driving around looking for a good place to do Sankirtan, distribute books. And I came around a corner, I looked, and there was this gigantic billboard with the pieces of this most beautiful, delicious-looking pizza I'd ever seen, this beautiful billboard. And I thought, wow. So I drove on, you know. About a minute later, I suddenly had this craving for pizza. I thought, boy, I could give anything for pizza. But, you know, whatever this place is, they probably stuff it with onions and garlic or whatever. So anyway, I fought off the urge. When I got back to the temple later that night, they were serving pizza. So Krishna was so kind as to to send pizza. So Krishna's like that, you see. But typically, those of us in the material world, we're directed by the material energy. You see, material energy, someone may see a picture in a magazine. Sometimes when I'm flying, I'll look through the magazine in the pocket in the seat in front of me just to see, you know, what's the world up to these days. And we see so many advertisements, pictures of attractive people. And they're smiling. They're always smiling. And they're dressed very well. And they're doing these appealing things. And they may have they may be demonstrating a beautiful bed. So you may think, typically the living entity thinks, oh, that's what I want. You know, I want a bed like that because I want to look like her. She was so pretty. My wife will be pretty like, and I will be handsome like him, you see. And the world will see me the way I see these people in this magazine. So I'm going to strive hard to get it. I'm going to work hard and save my money, you know, maybe take out another credit card or whatever I have to do. But I'm going to get a bed like that so I'll look like her, and my wife will be like her, and I'll look like him, and, you know, and I'll dress like him too, and I'll buy my wife a dress like that. So the world will see me the way I'm seeing them. In other words, I was impressed by that image, and now I want to impress you and have you see me like I see them. So everyone is playing their little movie. They're thinking like that. As we go around, we see people and they're simply acting. They're actors in a movie. They're simply playing this role. They've forgotten who they are. They don't know who they are. You see, they practically speaking have no identity. They're creating their identity as they go. And we can see people, we don't notice it amongst the devotee community, but if you notice your friends and relatives, you can see how their lives completely change all the time. You know, you'll see them one time and they've got a certain kind of hairdo and they wear a certain kind of clothes, and then a few years later they have a whole different do and a whole different wardrobe. You know, sometimes their hair is combed. You know, I remember one thing about old age is you can look back and you can see history. You can see how things. There are advantages to old age. Tamal Krishna Maharaj and I were discussing that several times, that old age will have, when we were younger, we used to say someday we'll be old men in rocking chairs and we'll just be sitting, and old age will have its advantages because we will have taken all the punches that Maya has, and, you know, we'll be educated from history. And and then later on, one day he told me, I started talking about us being old men in rocking chairs, and he told me that's not going to happen. We're not going to grow old together. And he never explained. I asked him, I said, why? And he said, we'll talk about that later, but he said, no, we won't. So, one collects this after seeing the material world go through its changes, and we see people go through their changes, establishing one identity and then throwing it away and establishing a whole new identity. Like in the 70s, in the 60s and early 70s, we grew our hairs out long and wore a certain kind of cloth, and that's the way things were. Then in the 80s, it kind of got to where people cut their hair and they smoothed it down and got into kind of like business. And then in the 90s, there were people it was common for the same people to have like half short hair and then a ponytail in back. And then sometime in the early 2000s, people decided to just mess their hair up and have it stand up, you know. And then, so as you see people, as I travel around, I see people that I've seen years ago, and I'm thinking, well, look at you today, you're so different, you know. And, you know, I haven't changed so much except I have more age wrinkles and maybe gain a few pounds or whatever. But you see, the devotees don't go through this. You know, we don't change our dress. We're wearing the dress that Lord Chaitanya gave us. We're wearing spiritual attire. Some people challenge, is it spiritual? You know, some people, I've heard people say, and I see on the internet, people say, well, that's not spiritual dress. Dhotis and kurtas and saris, You know, that's Indian clothes. That's Indian clothing. Well, I just spent 6 months in India. And even walking through Navadvip or Mayapur or Vrindavan, most of the time I was the only one that was wearing a dhoti. Isn't it? Isn't it like that? You know, the women, most of the women wear saris. You know, the women are much more. Of course, a lot of them are starting to wear Western clothing. So there's nothing Indian particularly about the way we dress. The people who wear dhotis and saris typically are making a spiritual statement. You see, everything that we're doing is we're trying to make a statement. It's just like, I remember back in the 60s in the hippie days, suddenly somebody showed up one day with a t-shirt with something written on it. Now, up until then, nothing was ever written on t-shirts. T-shirts were considered undergarments, you see. So along came somebody that had a t-shirt that said something like, I hate Nixon, or, you know, Led Zeppelin, you know, their favorite rock and roll band or whatever. So people are trying to make a statement with their clothing more and more as time goes by. Led Zeppelin. I'm a Led Zeppelin man. Aren't you impressed? You know? I hate Obama. Aren't you impressed? I hate this or I hate that. And I like this or I like that. So I'm trying to tell you. I want you to know something about me. I'm making a statement. So the businessman, he may be dressed in a expensive Armani suit and a silk tie and a very nice cotton shirt. And he's making a statement. I'm a successful businessman. Just look at my Rolex and you see. I want you to know that I'm successful. Just see how I'm dressing. And in the car, I drive a car. I drive a very nice Bentley or whatever. You see, I'm successful. So therefore, you can put your trust in me. You see. So everyone's making a statement. And we, the devotees of Krishna, we're also making a statement. We're making a statement. We are devotees of Krishna. We dress in the material world. There's a saying in business. I was in business for a long time in my householder years. There's a saying that it's okay to eat to please yourself, but dress to please others. You know, in other words, I want to please the people. If I'm a businessman, I want to please you. When you walk into my business or when I approach you, I want you to say, hey, wow, nice duds. This guy really knows. Oh, and people look at your shoes. Oh, look at those shiny shoes. So he cares about him. So that's your statement. the devotee is making a different kind of statement. Although we're making a statement, we're also dressing to please others. We're dressing to please Krishna. You see, we go before the deities. We don't necessarily go before the deity to see the deity. When we're taking darshan of the deity, we're letting the deity see us. We're going before the deity so Krishna can see us. You see. Now, we want to see him, but basically we want the Lord to see us. We want to have that relationship with him, you see. So we dress in a certain way to please him. Now, when the programs are over and it's time to go to work or do whatever, you know, many people change into street clothing, and that's quite all right. That's depending on the need. So, and I only bring this up because there's a lot of people in the U.S. I don't know how it is in the U.K. There's a whole movement trying to abandon dhotis and saris. Who needs them? And these people say, what's the importance? Is your outer covering that important? And to them I say, well, if it's not important, I mean, I'll go with what you're saying. It's not important. So then let's dress to please Krishna and dress to please Srila Prabhupada. And then people say, but Prabhupada never asked us to wear this cloth. He never asked us to dress like this. And that's a fact. He was shocked. He never thought that the dogs of the Western world would put on the dress of a Brahmin. You see, he never thought that the ladies would put on saris. He wasn't pushing for that, but he certainly was delighted. He was delighted. You see, he didn't ask or demand, but he was very pleased. And He said many times how he was very happy. So we know what makes him happy. He likes for us to show up for Guru Puja. And he sees us in dhotis and saris. And the deities see us in dhotis and saris. And they go, oh, you're doing this for me. And you're doing this so nicely for me. And that's touching to Krishna. Krishna is, when we add the element of love, Krishna is so easily touched. You see, he's conquered by love. If we can actually feel love for him, even if it's a little bit. Now, we may think, in humility, we may say, but I don't love Krishna. I barely love anything except myself, you see. But Krishna, he will extract a little bit, even if there's a tiny drop of love. He will delight on that, you see. He's very happy when you make some offering, because he knows in your current condition, what you're offering me is fantastic. You see, if you were Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he may expect more. But in our condition, if we offer a few drops of love, he's very happy. And he gives you facility to give him more, as you may desire. So this Brahman who's speaking here, we may wonder, well, why does he sleep sometimes on stone and sometimes in a bed? Doesn't he make any arrangement? You know, surely he must make an arrangement for his food. You know, doesn't he tell people, well, I'm on a special diet, you know, I'm not taking any chilies and, you know, no tomato or what, you know? No, he just takes whatever. Now, why is that? Does anybody have an idea? Why? Why does he live his life like this? He's dependent on Krishna. He's just depending on Krishna. Now, why is that? Let's go a little further. He's dependent on Krishna. Why? How does that manifest? Or how does this work? He's dependent on Krishna. Yes? Yeah. He accepts whatever comes. And the reason why he's caught up in this thinking of accepting whatever Krishna sends is that he wants to know, my dear Lord, what do you want? He's not even conscious of, well, I want this or I want that. He doesn't start out every day saying, now give me today my daily bread, you know. And, all right, Krishna, have you got a pen? Because I got a list here, you know. First of all, I need my daily bread. I need a loaf of this and a loaf of that. I need, we're out of cheese, so I need cheese. My car's not working well, so I need to fix that. You know, so in other words, we start giving, you know, I often joke and say sometimes, you know, we pray, Vande Guru Sri Charanaravindam, and other people pray one day's groceries, they ask for, instead of Vande Guru, one day's groceries. Come on, this is real funny stuff here. There you go, that's getting better. Okay. If you're waiting for real funny stuff, you're going to wait for a long time, so. You better laugh at the bad stuff. So many people start their day out, you know, my dear Lord. Or they end it at night, they pray, you know, give me this, give me that. You know, little Johnny needs to go to the dentist and, you know. But the devotee of Krishna, he's always wondering, how can I please you, my Lord? What can I do for you? The devotee wonders constantly. My dear Guru, my dear Sri Guru, my dear Krishna, what can I do? What is it that you want? You see? So the saintly person becomes so caught up in wondering, what does Krishna want, that he's not even thinking for himself. You see? He doesn't even think, well, all right, I'm just going to depend on Krishna. He doesn't have to think like that. He's just wondering so much how to please Krishna and what can I do for Krishna. He starts to think of Krishna as helpless. Krishna depends on me. I must do for him, you see. We learn that from the appearance of the deity. Krishna comes in the form of the deity in an apparently helpless form. You know, Krishna appears helpless. He can't do anything for himself. So we have to bathe him. And feed him and dress him. You see, he accepts this service from us. So deity worship will help us get into this frame of mind. If my Lord, he depends on me. You know, when I was head pujari in Dallas back in the 70s, I used to think that Radha Kala Chanji depended on me to do everything. In those days, we didn't have a big staff of pujaris. There was pretty much myself and a couple other people who took care of the deity. So we almost did everything. So there were many mornings when I felt sick or I couldn't. And I thought, well, but I have to, Krishna. What's going to happen if I don't go? So the devotee starts to think Krishna's depending on me, you see. Now, that's good. Some people argue, non-devotees, the devotees can understand that, but non-devotees say, well, how can you possibly think that God depends on you, you see? Well, ultimately, perhaps, he doesn't. He's the supreme controller. He can do everything and he can control everything. But he likes for us to consider that we are taking care of him, you see? He likes for us, as a matter of fact, he likes for us in the mode of service to tell him what we need to serve him. My dear Lord, I'm doing this and I'm doing that, and I need, I need a van because we have so many boys and we don't have we need to have the facility to travel and distribute books. We need that. You see, the Lord is happy to supply the devotee. When we start to depend on Krishna, he starts to give more and more. Jai. And it's not that, I mean, when we hear things like this, we sometimes think, wow, this is such deep thought. I could never be a devotee like that, you see. But again, it's like when we're thinking, well, I could never fully love Krishna. But if we can love him a little bit, he accepts that with great pleasure. So even though we may feel that we can't come fully to that platform of always wanting to please Krishna, if we can do it some, if we can take steps that way and live our lives in such a way, then Krishna is very delighted. And that starts a relationship with him. When I took Vanaprast years ago and started to travel and didn't have a base or a home or anything like that, I just had to depend on Krishna, you see, for whatever. I had nothing. When I left household life, I didn't have a savings or anything. I was just a wandering fool, you know. And now I'm a bigger wandering fool, just a bigger fool. And I wander even more. But I had to depend on Krishna. So, and I tried my best to do that, but it was easy because I had no one else to depend on. I couldn't go to the temple and say, I need this or I need that. I just have to play and beg. I beg Krishna, oh, please give me that. I need this, you know, for service. So I didn't need anything for myself, but for the services that I wanted to perform. So through the years, Krishna responded in so many different ways. And one story I'll share with you that some people find kind of funny. And this is an example of what happens to the traveling preacher. I was going to El Paso, Texas. You know, anybody know? Out in the middle of the desert in West Texas. It's out in the middle of nowhere. It's like, you know, it's right across the Rio Grande River from Mexico. And it's kind of isolated by itself. So I was going out there to preach. I'd been going out there for years and finally had some people that were becoming devotees. And so the place where I usually stayed, which is a kind of a rundown junky motel, a Patel motel, was not able to put me up. And it's like, it's 650 miles from Dallas, and you're still in Texas. It's that far. It's like, I'm telling you, out in the middle of nowhere. So that would be like 1,000 kilometers, wouldn't it? Something like that, you know. So it's a long way. So I get out there, and there's no place to stay. And I thought, oh, Krishna, what are we going to do now? So this one hippie boy said, well, I've got this little room out in the back of my house. It's kind of like a garage, small garage, or a tool shed, and we could move some things around. You could sleep in there. And I thought, that's better than outside, you know, so sure. So they put on an inflatable bed, and I said, I'm not picky. You know, I don't make many demands. So I thought I'd joke with him. He felt badly that he was going to give me this tool shed to sleep in, so I thought I'd loosen it up with humor, and I said, I'm not very picky, and I don't make many demands. The only thing that I have to have is a giant screen, flat screen TV with it, HD, you know, high definition, with remote control. Simply must have a king-size bed and a whirlpool bath in the bathroom. Other than that, whatever you have is fine. And he's looking at me like, well, I don't have it. I said, look, it's a joke, so loosen up. So he laughed. So he thought it was funny. So I stayed there a couple of days, and then we had a couple of programs. And then we had this one program, and this nice Indian gentleman came up to me afterwards, and he said, oh, thank you so much for coming to El Paso. I've been praying for this. He's aspiring for Radhanath Maharaj, the initiation from Radhanath Maharaj. And he's he was in our Philadelphia temple for years. He's out in El Paso. And he said, where are you staying? And I said, well, I'm staying in Anthony's house. So he went and talked to Anthony, and he came back and he said, I insist, you can't stay there. And I said, well, no, it's okay. And he said, no, I own a hotel. You should move into my hotel. And I'm thinking, I don't want to pack everything up. I'm already situated. And so I said, well, no, it's okay. No, no, I insist. I have room for you in my hotel. And I thought, another motel, but okay. You know, just to solidify the relationship, someone's offering, you accept. You see? I mean, we're duty-bound to, if we're going to establish a relationship. And preaching is basically establishing and maintaining relationships, you see. If you're going to bring people to the point of initiation and chanting Hare Krishna, following the regulative principles, you establish and then maintain a relationship and bring them along. So I thought, okay, I'll go. So I followed him over to his hotel, and it was this big hotel. It wasn't anything like the little motels that I usually see. Gigantic hotel, big Holiday Inn, and he took me down the hallway, opened the door to my room, and the first thing I saw was a giant screen, flat screen HD TV with remote control, and the gigantic king-size bed. And I thought, wait a minute. And I went in the bathroom and looked, and sure enough, the bathtub had a whirlpool bath. And I said, Krishna, I'm just joking. Can't you take a joke? You know. Yeah. So Krishna does that, and, you know, he's like that. He even trumps you a little bit. You know, you asked for this and this and this, and I gave you that and that and that, and this to boot. So, but then sometimes we may not have such nice facilities. And I'm not trying to make you think that I'm on the level of this pure-hearted Brahmin. But a traveling preacher does kind of have to depend a little bit on the mercy of the Lord. When we're thinking of, I'm only doing this, my Lord, to satisfy you, to satisfy Guru and Krishna, you know. Typically, Westerners want to retire. You know, in America, they want to, when they turn 65 or whatever, they retire on a pension and go to Florida. People like to go to Florida. You know, as Prabhupada said, they go to Florida and they lay in the dirt. They go to Florida, lay on the beach. You know, Prabhupada said they lay in the dirt. You know, at the end of their life, they go to Florida and lay in the dirt. You know, so I didn't want to go lay in the dirt. But I don't know, where do people retire in UK? What is it? South of France? What is it? Spain? Yeah? Yeah? Yeah, so people have that desire. And being a Westerner, when I was a very young man, before I became a devotee, I had that desire to someday go lay in the dirt or whatever, you know, play shuffleboard. So we have those, but then the devotee thinks, all right, now it's the end of my life. My dear Lord, all my life I've done for me and I've done for others, you know, family, whatever. Now I just want to do for you. And I don't feel like traveling, but I will. And I hope you'll give me the health and the ability to do so, but I'm here. The only qualification that I feel that the devotee really needs is that I'm here and I'm willing to follow your will, my Lord. I don't have a developed love for you. You know, I can't say that I'm advanced, but I'm here and I'm willing, and I'm depending on you. to give me what's needed to serve you, you see. And the Lord reciprocates. He truly does. You know, this isn't a fairy tale. This isn't like a make-believe. You know, these things happen. And some people can say, well, that's coincidence. Well, coincidences don't happen for many, many, many years. They don't continue. That's not the nature of coincidence, you see. So we have to develop our Krishna consciousness to the point that we start to think so much less about what we want. But it's ingrained into us. We worry about what I want, you know, what I want to eat, where I want to go, what I want to do, you see. And start to think as we lessen that and increase, what does Krishna want? What does my guru want? What does Guru and Krishna want? And we get caught up in it. You can get caught up in it because Krishna, he doesn't really just come out and say it right away, you know. You actually have to probe and think. You have to meditate on it, you see, and be ready. He'll start to send you signs on what he wants, but you have to, it's not like you can just say, hey, Krishna, send me an email. Let me know what you want. You know, call me, you know. It doesn't really work like that. You have to be ready. You know, you have to have that desire that, please tell me, my Lord, you know, because I don't know what you want, but I've got an idea. So I'm thinking maybe I'll do this. That's my plan. You know, in Mayapur, they have a saying that if you want to make Radha Madhav laugh, tell them your plans. So we make a plan. We meditate and we make a plan. This is how I'm going to serve Krishna. And then Krishna tells us what he wants and how we're going to serve him. You know, sometimes your plan is good, but most of the times Krishna says, oh, that's very good. Now, here's how we're going to do it, though. You see? So, which is his kindness. So, so this is the nature of development of our spiritual life, starting to desire to please Krishna and to wonder, how can I please you? You see? And we see that. We can develop that in the way we dress, in the way we eat. You know, some in the beginning, we think, well, you know, today I'd like a pizza. So I think I'm going to make a pizza, put it on the altar, get Krishna to bless it. And then I'm going to devour this pizza, you see. And then through the years, we'll develop thinking, my Lord, what do you want to eat? You see, what can I feed you today? And you may say, well, I don't have deities. Well, you can have a picture of Krishna. And we start to think, what do you want? What do you like? You see, there's an argument some places. They say, well, you know, we should have a diet like this or a diet like that. Well, what does Krishna like to eat? You know, at the Bhoga Arti prayer, if you ever read the English translation to the Bhoga Arti and the description of what Krishna likes to eat, he tells you, right? That's right there. And it's very nice. You see, so the devotee starts to want what Krishna likes, and we forget. Well, I prefer this or I prefer that. We start to really, really want to know what does Krishna prefer, and as soon as we know what Krishna loves, oh, immediately that's attractive. You know, if Krishna likes a certain dish, it's got to be good. You know, it may not be like mother or grandma used to fix. It may not be what we're accustomed to from our heritage or whatever, but we know it's from Krishna. He likes it, you see. It pleases him, so it becomes very attractive to us. I remember in 1976, I was in Mayapur, and I was lurking around outside of Prabhupada's room, just hoping to get a glance or, you know, maybe some service or whatever, you know. And Pusta Krishna came out, and Srila Prabhupada had just finished taking prasadam. And so Prabhupada, when he would eat, after he finished, he would stir his remnants. He would stir them up because it's offensive to pick and choose. You know, if someone offers you maha, you don't say, I'll take that one, but not that one. That's an offense. You're supposed to just take it. You know, as best thing as you say, just give me. So Prabhupada, in order to keep us from doing that, he would stir his plate, stir all the remnants up. So Pusta Krishna walked out the door, and he looked at me. He said, you again. What do you want? I said, mercy. He said, here you go. He gave me a big handful of Prabhupada's remnants. And I woofed it down. He said, "You want more?" And I said, "All right, off you go." You know, so you know where I was every day at that time. So, but as soon as we taste, as soon as I tasted Prabhupada's prasadam, I thought, that is good. In other words, the definition of what's tasty changes. This tells you what is tasty. Prabhupada likes this. So whatever I thought I liked that mom cooked or my grandma cooked or whatever, now it's been realigned. Now I know what tasty prasadam should taste like. And I tried to remember, every day I would try to remember what's in this. This must be cumin and the chunks and like that. And then when I got back to the U.S., I tried to cook like that and develop that taste because we're offering it. You say, we're cooking for Krishna. We're cooking for Guru and Krishna. We're not cooking for ourselves. You know, it's okay to think that, in the beginning, don't be discouraged if you're thinking, well, I'm cooking for me and I'm going to offer it. But try to hit the target of cooking for Krishna, to please Krishna, you see. And you'll be even more pleased. When we try to please Krishna, we end up being far more pleased than we could ever imagine if we try to just please ourselves.